And good morning. The following members are present. We have Representative Foster, Representative Shelley, Representative Higgins, Representative Josephson, and Representative Nagyak. My co-chair, Sharice Millett, is sick today, and Representative Isaacson, myself, is here. I'd like to recognize the staff. House Recording Secretary is Debbie Tillinghast, and our LIO moderator is Alex Giudice. And we have Dave Tallarico, my committee aide, and Jeff Turner is around here, Sharice's committee aide, who helped set this up today. So again, before we start, remember, silence your cell phones so that they don't go off. Otherwise, you owe us big, fat donuts.
Oh.
And huge apology to our presenters. Today with us, we have what's commonly referred to as RuralCAP, the Rural Alaska Community Action Program, Inc. And with us is Sarah Scanlon, the Deputy Director, and Ellen Kazari. I hope I didn't slaughter that too bad, Development Director. And they're talking today about design energy programs designed to meet the needs of Alaskans. They have a 1.6 million capital request, and this is information relating to that. So if we have questions, if you don't mind, we'll interrupt you as you go along. You're the only thing on our agenda today, and so we want to understand what it is that you're bringing forward to us. So at this time, I give you the floor.
Okay. Well, good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. We appreciate the opportunity to present to you today.
Can you scoot that up a little bit more, and Alex, give her some volume? Thank you.
And the time that you took with us to meet with you and or your staff to give you some familiarity with the project, the program, our energy issues going on around the state, which are not new to any of you. You've been dealing with this for a long, long time. We thought that we would, again, try to help the state in a small way reduce the burden of Alaskans. And we are coming to the state to for a request that is matched by private and other funds to help do that. I'm going to quickly run. My name is Sarah Scanlon.
Thank you.
I've been at NANA, was at NANA for many, many years, worked at First Alaskans Institute for a little bit after that, and have been at RuralCAP for 5 years now. And we do, maybe we'll do the next slide there. We are involved in several main priorities. Again, we try to meet the needs of Alaskans. We do child development, early childhood education, self-help, weatherization, affordable housing, energy programs. We do solid waste management programs, and then we try to build capacity by training and employing people throughout Alaska.
And Sarah, I might let you know that online is Kirk Oviak, also of Selawik, so I believe he's with you. And
yes.
If you want to have him testify, and I believe Tommy Ballett Sr. also will be joining us. So utilize them as you see fit.
Okay, thank you. And our discussion with them is that they will follow our presentation.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So next. Very quickly, before I introduce Ellen, who will take us directly into the presentation, as you can see here, RuralCAP is all over the place. We're in 81 communities throughout Alaska last year. We employed over 1,000 people, and we had payroll of over $16 million. So we feel like that economic impact can be further enhanced by energy burden reduction programs. And again, we want to talk to you about that in conjunction with how it fits into the broader picture of what's already going on or what the legislature is talking about doing with the larger projects, and how we are working with our weatherization programs across the state to do that, and how this kind of program, energy-wise, is designed to be one that is sustained over time at low cost to the state. So you'll see that very clearly and easily as we go through the presentation here. And again, thank you, Mr. Chair. If you have any questions during the presentation, we would welcome those, and I think we're prepared to respond to them. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Ellen Kazari and ask her to introduce herself briefly and jump right into the presentation.
Thanks, Sarah. I'm Ellen Kazari, the Development Director at RuralCAP. And I think we wanted to start with not news to anybody, but when we were at AFN this year, we did a survey, several hundred participants telling us, what is the top need in your community? And, of course, you can see on the pie chart and the graph, it's energy for everybody, rural and urban Alaska. And we try and stay in touch with our constituents, our board members, and really get ongoing feedback. What are your top concerns? But it's never a surprise, and it hasn't been. RuralCAP's been around for 50 years almost, and we've heard energy needs all the time. Just another way of looking at that slide, that even in urban Alaska, it's the same pinch people are feeling with high energy costs. And then when we look at the numbers regionally, what average households are spending on their electric and home heating bills, you can see why it's a top concern. It's a huge portion of people's incomes going to cover home heat and electricity costs. And that always brings up the question of how do we have sustainable communities when there is a question I hear from the local people I meet with, it's a heat or eat question, so they're concerned. We're either going to be hungry or cold, and it just, what are we going to do about that? Because in our country, that doesn't, we have the resources to fix these problems. And then it seems to be even harsher with the low-income population, where in several regions of Alaska it can be 40 to 50% of their total household income. So it's harder on lower-income people to deal with these high energy costs because it's almost like a flat costs. So one of the programs RuralCAP has been running, and we'll just touch on this briefly because you're all familiar with weatherization, but just to let you know what our role in weatherization is. RuralCAP is the largest weatherization service provider in the state. We serve Anchorage, which is new in the last couple of years, Juneau, and then a lot of that other area over there, the north western part of the state. So we've been providing weatherization services since weatherization started. We expect to be in about 830 homes in the coming year. And this is a full program that really deals with the whole home, looking at the envelope, trying to seal heat loss, insulations, windows. So it's really the big construction work that we do. It's a simple process. We've tried to make it a four-step process so that rural and urban residents who are eligible for weatherization know what's involved. We've been simplifying the application so that it's easy to become enrolled. Each home is assessed, and then there's a prescription put together for each home to really identify the top needs, which will benefit the energy bills the most, really get a specific prescription for the home so that we use those dollars that are set aside for weatherization to the best of our ability and have the best results. Then we work with local crews and trained crew supervisors to do the training on the ground and get the work done within the building season. And then there just a few slides on what some of the typical weatherization work is. A lot of ventilation and making sure that there's good indoor air quality, safety, again, windows, doors, insulation, really what's going to benefit the home the most. And then the homes always just look so nice afterwards. It's a great picturesque moment. The residents get to choose the color of their homes. We wrap it all up, and it usually takes 2 or 3 years in some of the communities, and then there's some quality control where we go back for inspections and make sure that things are going well and respond to any issues or questions. So weatherization right now, like I said, we're planning on doing 830 homes in the coming year. In the past 4 or 5 years, across the state, about 8,500 homes have been weatherized, and that's at the current funding level. I think one of our concerns going forward is that the governor's budget asked for $60 million for weatherization and the home rebate program, which is about half of what we currently are operating under. So AHFC has put forward their recommendation of $101.5 million. There's a significant difference there. We're thinking that if the governor's budget is the one that goes forward, we're probably looking at a reduction of about half of what we're currently doing in weatherization.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Ms. Kazari, what did this body do in the operating budget? How did we treat you, for lack of a better word? Do you know how? There are too many possible things for me to recall. How did we do for you?
Do you know
that? Representative Josephson, through the chair, are you asking what the current budget is now?
No, last week we did our operating budget, and I just don't know where we were relative to the governor, if you know.
I'm afraid I
That's
don't
fine.
know either.
And we'll wait on the operating because we're looking at capital budget. Representative Hughes.
Could you just repeat the numbers, the governor's number, and then what AHFC recommended, please?
Thank you, Representative Hughes. Through the chair, what the governor's number is about $60 million for both the home rebate program and the weatherization program, and that's approximately a 50-50 split on what that's typically gone to. And then what AHFC has requested is $101.5 million.
And if you would, Ellen, talk to us a little bit about the number of homes, because we've been doing these projects now, as you said, you've been around for 50 years, and weatherization's been around for at least 30 of those years. And how many homes are there that need to be done? And maybe talk to us about the economics of this, because if we're still not getting all the homes, and if the new homes aren't being built to these proper standards, what does that say about what we're doing to make sure people are able to live, work, and play out in their communities? I mean, we need to be providing economic opportunities so people can actually pay their own way. And if we're not developing roads and resources and connecting communities with energy sources, I mean, really, aren't we just exacerbating the problem? Aren't we perpetuating poverty? I know a lot of complex questions in that, but maybe you could address that as an envelope answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we all agree that there is an ongoing energy need in the entire state that's hard to figure out the silver bullet solution. Weatherization is part of the solution. It is actually hard to get the exact number. I don't have the exact number of the homes that have been weatherized in the last 40 years. I know that since 2008, it's about 8,500. My understanding is, and please bear with me if I'm a little rusty on this, but my understanding is there are about 29 to 30,000 households in rural Alaska, but the weatherization program is an income-based program that serves the entire state, so there's a broader number there if we include Fairbanks, Juneau, and Anchorage. One of the other things I think we all keep in mind in the weatherization world is that every 10 years is when a community could be eligible again to have weatherization services, or that's about what service providers expect when they're going back into communities. And we think about it, I think about it even with my own home, watching the annual repairs I need to make and knowing that a home being weatherized doesn't mean that it's never going to need anything else again. So it's kind of an ongoing need to help residents keep their homes up to date. But that's one of the reasons we've developed a program like EnergyWise, which is what we're going to talk about next, is that is a way that we work with the people inside the home, not just the house as a structure, but with residents on how to maintain and preserve their weatherization improvements or just their home in general. And that is a partnership even within RuralCAP. I think we're all struggling as a state with the needs exceeding the resources we have. So we can't work in silos anymore. We can't just provide one program, each of us going to the home to provide a different service. We have to figure out how to combine our services. So one of the things we're doing with our EnergyWise program, our weatherization work, is teaming up to see how we can not only touch the improve the envelope of the building through our weatherization services, but also do the people part that we've kind of mastered with our EnergyWise program and combine those together. So we're not only working on home improvements, but working with the residents on ways they can preserve those improvements for as long as possible.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
If I could add to your tough philosophical question. You know, I'm as many of you in this room, a lifelong Alaskan, and I take great pride in coming from this great state. And my family is has been here in Alaska for centuries. And I know how tough it is for you all to battle this discussion about how do we provide equity and balance with these huge Susitna Dam projects and other energy projects, the gas line, with what folks who choose to live in other communities that aren't going to have access to those projects, how we do that fairly and equitably, and with some sense of all of us being Alaskans and really having a mind that is about let's take care of one another together. Let's not have these splits in philosophy, but rather what do we need to do for each other to make this and allow the state to be the great state that it is. And so the ANCSA CEOs are in town. I went to their reception last night. They are doing what they can to address resource development, economic development, and as we all know, have done a heck of a job adding to the economy of Alaska. Many of the shareholders live out there, and they're trying to do their part in addressing the question that you brought up, is about how do we allow people to live, and are we just adding to the poverty problem? And I think we all just need to give it deep thought, just as you had the deep question about what do we all need to do to work together on this and make it work for everybody. And I appreciate the question, and I know that's the debate that you all have every day with things like the oil line and gas line. But I want us to remember that this is really about taking care of one another. Your jobs as legislators to do that. Our jobs as civilians and constituents to help you understand what we can do together. And Ellen's point about we see the squeeze coming everywhere. And what do we as a provider need to do to work with others so that that squeeze is around the table and we're sharing resources and leveraging money and not trying to protect our own little interests and make your jobs tougher for where you have to make cuts. So that's where we're going in moving forward with the many programs that we do. And it's not just about handout programs. It's about teaching people self-sufficiency, how to pull themselves out of poverty, and what can these little programs do that are about teaching people how they can do that. How can we all do that together? So I appreciate your question. I came from the private sector over to RuralCap to start dealing with the kinds of questions that you ask, is how can we help people help themselves rather than having this mentality of the government needs to take care of me.
I appreciate that answer. Thank you, both of you. First, Representative Hughes, and then Representative Nagyak.
And thank you for sharing that perspective. That's helpful. I'm going back to the 8,500 homes in 5 years, about 30,000 households, so that we're getting close to, if that's correct, about a third in 5 years, which is excellent, although you did mention the need, and down the road in 10 years there could be need to go back and do more. But I was wondering what the funding was last year, and you probably mentioned it, but we're talking about the governor's request was $60 million, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation recommending $101 million. And how that compares to last year, and how many homes that could do is the question. And then does that state funding leverage other funding? I think you mentioned there were private and other funds. So the less state funds, is that then therefore leveraging less federal funds? And I'm guessing that you may have concerns that if there are federal funds, that those may be going down. So could you please speak to that?
Thank you, Representative Hughes. Through the chair, I was trying to break down the question into the different parts. As far as the federal funding question goes, Alaska or RuralCap has received very little federal funding for weatherization in the past year or so. There is a decline for weatherization funding federally. I believe they're looking at something like $60 million on the national level, and Alaska has really taken the lead on prioritizing weatherization work with state funding for the past few years and decreased their reliance on the Department of Energy funding for weatherization work. So there is, my understanding is there is a little bit of the Department of Energy funding that comes to Alaska, but right now I'm not sure that it's even a significant amount that we rely on for this work. And it's one of those things, it's hard to explain the funding for the past few years with how much the state has put into weatherization, because there was a significant bump 2009 with some ERA funding that did basically double weatherization work. And then that got spent out. It was a big bump here, and then it wasn't all spent that year. It was spent over these past 4 years, which is why they often describe what's happened in the last 5 years, AHFC does, because that's been a lot relying on the ramp up with weatherization work with that increase from the stimulus package. So this is probably the first year looking ahead that that money has been spent, which is why if last year there was $60 million in new state funding going to weatherization, that doing that again means that weatherization is basically dropping in half, because last year there was that $60 million about that from new money, but also the leftover ERA funds that brought it up to the total of what AHFC is talking about $101 million. So that's why it's been a little hard to pinpoint exactly how much, because there's been that stimulus funding being spent out over a series of years. So I think overall it's been about $100 million put into the rebate program and weatherization services over the past few years. Some of that's been new state money, some of that's been the stimulus.
Follow up?
Good.
Okay. Representative Dragiak.
Thank you. For the record, I'm on the board of World Cup. Right. I was appointed by the Bush caucus. And I'm past president of Rural Cap, and I know they have, the Rural Cap has worked hard in terms of making life a bit easier for people in the villages, especially the weatherization program. And back when I was president of the Rural Cap, we created Rural Energy Enterprises, and it's a good growing concern. Part of Rural Cap, and they provide state-of-the-art heaters for villages, or they sell them. You know, it's a for-profit enterprise for Rural Cap, and so they've been doing that for at least 20 years, for quite a few years. And another thing, I think they've been working with a lot of people in the past to see how they can provide more and better services in terms of reducing cost for energy and all that, and this is one of the programs. And I think one of the things that that is missing sometimes with the state is that working with tribes is very important. We need to have the state recognize tribes, because the tribes have a lot of avenues to get money from the federal government. And I think if we partner with tribes, we can make life a bit more, much easier, and to get more projects done with Rural Cap, partnering with Rural Cap tribes and others, and we can do a lot more in our part of the world. Because in the north, in my area, in the North Slope, our tribal village government has been working on weatherization project for many years, fixing people's homes. It's in partnership with other organizations in our area. So I think one of the things we need to do is to recognize that there are tribes and in the state, and they're willing to help solve some of these problems. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Higgins, then Representative Foster.
Thank you. We had a great conversation yesterday. Being new and a freshman here, sometimes it's hard for me to wrap my head around how things work. And so basically, from my understanding, is Alaska Housing Finance has this big chunk of money that they give grants to for weatherization programs. Rural Cap is an organization that comes in and asks Alaska Housing Finance, right? You guys get grant money from them to help with your weatherization programs that you're doing. Is that, I mean, am I understanding it correct so far?
Yes, Representative Higgins, through the chair. That's correct. Okay. We are one of the four main providers of weatherization services.
So now you said you've got $1.6 million in the capital budget that you're asking for. So does your $1.6 million, what exactly does that do for Rural Cap? I mean, is that for salaries? Is that for materials to weatherize? I mean, to put into houses? Where is that $1.6 million I'm trying to figure out, because I know you're going to Alaska Housing Finance for money also, so how does that all play in?
Thank you, Representative Higgins. Through the chair, we actually have two different energy programs that we're talking about. The first one is the weatherization program, and that's separate than the $1.6 million request. That's funded through AHFC, and part of what we wanted to do, part of why we were so happy for the opportunity to talk here today, is talk a little bit about what resources, programs we have. I was really inspired by all the conversations we've had one-on-one over the past few weeks, and just thinking about how we can reorganize or partner up to provide consolidated services as efficiently as possible with knowing the funding crunch that is coming. So weatherization is funded through AHFC. Our EnergyWise program is a separate program that's more about education and efficiency and conservation for residents within the homes, and that's what we can present about next. That is what the $1.6 million request would fund.
So we're right on track then.
Yeah.
good segue. However, we're going to have Representative Foster first.
Thank you. Just a clarification on that, Mr. Chairman, and then my question. So the clarification, if the 1.6 is for the energy wise, how much do you receive then for the weatherization? Like, say, for example, last year?
Okay, Representative Foster through the chair. I believe last year it was $15 million that RealCap received, and that's to serve Juneau, Anchorage, and rural Alaska, and I believe we completed over 1,000 homes with that funding.
Okay, thank you. And then the question, Mr. Chairman. And the question was, since you received the money from AHFC, and thanks for that clarification because I didn't actually know that, if you receive that money through AHFC, then that means that you probably follow the eligibility guidelines, the federal eligibility guidelines. And from what I understand, if you're in, for example, in the PASCIAC, I'm just going to throw out a number, the eligibility might be the income eligibility might be $30,000. You can't make any more than $30,000, and of course the cost of living out there in the PASCIAC is high. But then, if you go to maybe Anchorage, from what I understand, the eligibility income level might be $40,000, or the cost of living is lower. Is that correct? And do you have any comment on that? And do you have any suggestions on what we might do to? I realize that's a federal guideline, but I just wanted to see if you had any thoughts on that.
Thank you, Representative Foster. Through the chair, and I'm sure Sarah will have some thoughts on this too, but it is one of the hardships that we hear back from people in both urban and rural Alaska. Weatherization funds are constrained by income eligibility guidelines, and we must follow those to receive and use our funding. There is a whole section of middle-income people who might not be eligible for weatherization and really struggle trying to make improvements to their home on their incomes. And I think that's more so from my experience from working in rural Alaska, that's much more common in rural Alaska than in urban areas, where it doesn't cost an extra 20 to 50% to have your supplies shipped. So the state of Alaska has been running, AHFC has been running this wonderful and very popular rebate program where homeowners can put the money forward to do upfront improvements on their home, and then some of that does get refunded, or they get a rebate for that. Very popular, very successful. We support it, but it is really hard to do in rural Alaska because it's the same cost, same rebate potential, but the cost to the resident of getting the supplies shipped, just even getting access to the supplies is so high that it also often impedes their ability to do that. And in addition, the cost of living impacts their ability to put the money up front, which is often about $8,000 to $10,000 of upfront cost to the resident. So we're really hearing strong feedback from our many partners throughout rural Alaska that rebate program is great, but it's best in urban areas, and there's this middle income population struggling to figure out how to maintain homes and make improvements in rural Alaska and not seeing that resource. Another reason why we have been trying to work on the EnergyWise program.
Ellen, have you or RealCap looked at using a voucher so that there's not a direct upfront expense to those who, rural or urban, especially rural, who can't upfront the money, but you know the work's going to be done, and so why not just have a program that can directly pay the percentage or the portion that is going to be paid by the state to the vendor and have the rest of it being paid by the individual.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, we've actually had this conversation. We've been partnering with NANA to bring the EnergyWise program to their region and had several meetings with them. We're just brainstorming about how to further use energy resources and meet the needs. And we've talked about that exact option. Is there a way we can have some sort of middleman front the cost rather than putting it on the rural residents? Currently, that's, to my understanding, not how the rebate program is set up. It hasn't been Rural Cap's role at this point to run the rebate program because it's more of an AHFC individual homeowner relationship. But as far as our conversations in the past and the points you're bringing up today, it seems like that is a way to look at it going forward, perhaps a change that could be made to make this more accessible to others.
Is that a legislative fix or is that just an agency fix?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure. I think it would be looking in more detail at the regulations that control the rebate program and seeing what's an option out there.
We'll look into it, too. But if you have some express thoughts, please get back to me and the co-chair, and we'll inform also the committee members. But that's the kind of stuff we'd like to be able to help with. That type of language we can work out through here and put through the process and enable you to be more effective in meeting the needs of our people that you're helping.
And Mr. Chair, thank you. I appreciate your question because it has been an issue and a concern of folks out there about wanting to take advantage of the rebate program but not being able to. We heard it loud and clear up in Nome last fall when we were there, for example. So people would participate, and as you know, it's a program where you pay for it yourself, but you got to have the resources up front to make it happen. So I know more people would participate if we had a way to make it work with them and for them. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. I think we've hit the questions, and we're ready for the segue.
Thank you. All right, so what we've been working on to really try and stretch energy resources and meet the needs of more people is our EnergyWise program. And this is really something we've been developing, honestly, about 10 years or more, trying to figure out the right way to provide energy efficiency and conservation education and improvements in homes. And that's really, it's a people question. It's how do you work with the people in the homes, not just the building. Our goal is to work with the local communities and help relieve the burden of high energy costs. And for me, this really came up about 10 years ago. I was out on my first trip for Rural Cap in Togiak, and we were piloting an early version of this program. I was sitting with a woman in her home, and basically, you know, some of what we do is just ask, what would be the most helpful thing we can do for you? And her home is about the size of this meeting room. And she got up and went to her kitchen and brought back a shoebox filled with her electric bills and said, just tell me why these costs are so high. And her electric bills, we went through several months, $200, $300, $400. But when you're sitting, I didn't walk into the home and think, oh my goodness, I bet your bills are through the roof. There's nothing obvious going on. So we spent some time. I had a kilowatt meter with me, which you can use to test how much energy appliances are using. And you can, you know, do a simple calculation with the kilowatt cost to see, you know, your refrigerator uses this much per year or per day. So we went through her whole home and tried to identify some of the hot spots of what she could do to reduce her energy costs. And from there and some of our previous experience, we've really developed this new program that makes it individualized in the home. How can you lower your energy costs? We were able to receive funding for this in 2009. That really helped us pilot a large version of this program that focuses on reducing energy consumption and creating and hiring local individuals for the work. Since 2010, we've been in 22 communities, 2,000 households, and about 80% of those people are reporting that they're maintaining the changes, they have lower bills, their homes are warmer, easier to keep warm, and we've employed about 240 rural Alaskans. And this isn't just something we came up with on our own without looking at research and what's really working out there. We've been working closely with Alaska Energy Authority and their Energy Efficiency Working Group, which we're a part of. And they commissioned a report in 2011 about what would be the most appropriate energy efficiency and conservation education program, and highlighted the EnergyWise project as the sort of program that should be replicated around the state. We've also had just a lot of articles that I think a broad variety of organizations and interests have been put forward that this program is working. We've worked with a lot of different partners to make sure that we're all on board and using our resources as effectively as possible. We've gotten funding through the Department of Energy to help with our evaluations. Now the Commission's been a partner. Department of Labor's been helping us train people. And we've really been working with the local community organizations and utilities to make sure we're all on track and doing what we can to share our resources. This program isn't designed to replace weatherization or to be a cheaper version of weatherization. It's meeting a different part of the energy need, where it's really focusing on the education piece, on working with individuals, like I mentioned earlier, to maintain, if they've had their home weatherized, how do they maintain those improvements? If they're not eligible for weatherization and we can talk about how they can reduce their energy costs, let's do that. So what we're really looking at is the people inside the home. So we've developed this program to have the most effective way of reaching individuals. So we hire locally, depending on the size of the community. It's 4 to 10 crew members that we hire from the community. They receive training and professional certification and then work with us for about, typically about three to four months, but it can be shorter if the community is smaller and there are fewer homes. We're also keeping an eye on, if we're working with people, we want them to be ready for future employment, and we've heard a lot from our various partners that it would be great if crews had training to make them ready for weatherization work that's coming along, construction work. So we have been partnering up with Alaska Works Partnership and Department of Labor to provide technical training. So people receive, who work with EnergyWise, get Weatherization Tech 1 certification, OSHA 10 certification, so they're ready for construction work and first aid training. We start with, it's a very simple program that basically has three parts. We start with a community energy fair, which is run by the local community and the local hires, scheduled at a time that works for them, and really relies on local resources like the tribal and city council and the school. And they just do an overview of what energy efficiency and conservation looks like. It's the first time that people hear the series of messages they're going to hear. We've had great participation rates, and this is when they sign up for the most intensive part, which is the home visit. So for a home assessment, our crews spend a full day in the home with the residents. And this, I think, is where a lot of energy education programs fall down, is they do passive education. They might tell you you should fix this, but they don't show you how. So our crews are trained to work with the residents in their home for a full 8 hours. We have two crew members who go through everything from looking at electric bills, explaining how PCE works, and then going through the entire home and all the appliances, all the electronics, and saying, here are your hot spots of where you're seeing the most energy being used, and here are the changes you can make to improve that. They do install about $300 worth of very low-tech supplies. Simple things like CFLs and cleaning refrigerator coils with a little brush. So they're not high tech, but they make a big difference when you have, you know, a couple dozen of those things happening in a household. And I think this engagement piece is really where it's different from other programs and where it's very effective. I think our favorite story is, you know, having a crew member call us from Selawik and saying, I've got the math wrong, help me out with this, because I'm looking at this coffee pot is costing $750 a year when I test it. And he wasn't doing the math wrong. There's a lot in your home that, even especially if you have older electronics or older appliances, that just adds up. So a better solution that we've been using is just having a $20 coffee carafe that people then can use. So you think about doing a dozen things like that in a home over the course of the year, you're really going to see some savings. Just a picture of all the supplies that go in the homes. Again, pretty low-tech stuff. There's a lot of misinformation out there about what costs the most in the home. You know, people think that if they turn off the lights when they leave the room, that's going to be the most effective thing they can do. When you really look at the studies, a lot of it is about your hot water. It's about heat loss. And it's about appliances and, you know, making sure that if you have two refrigerators, they both have full.
condense it into one. So it's some simple things. Again, here's some of the work of our crews just in the homes with the residents, showing them how to install minor insulation around outlets or putting a new door sweep in the door. And these are areas where we have some of the biggest home heat leaks. And then also working with water heaters. There, again, that's, I think, about, in some homes, about 25% of where their electricity is going if they have an electric hot water heater. So then our final portion is to go back 3 to 6 months later. Our crews sit down with the resident and spend some time in the home. Again, this is about an hour to 2 hours per home, where they go over what was installed and make sure they answer any questions. They do a survey to see if it's still working and, you know, get feedback from the resident. So we've been doing this three pieces. That's the third time they hear the message. And our budget's pretty simple about how things break down, where the costs go. It does cost, if we include everything that happens for the EnergyWise program, it costs about $2,000 a household. About half of that goes into the local employment and training. About 25% of that goes into supplies, and we've made a huge effort to make sure that we buy as much as we can within the state. So that's from a lot of Anchorage suppliers, but funding spent in the state and then on shipping. And then we have about 27% that's on management of the program and shipping, logistics, getting things organized, our accounting system, all of that. In 2010, so this was our big year when we had a significant portion of funding. We had 120 rural Alaskans we had hired. 90% of them stayed throughout the entire program. They're really engaged. They were fantastic to work with. We're on the phone with them after we do our training in the community. We call each site in the morning to check in, and 9 o'clock in the morning, everybody's up and going and excited. It was just great to work with the crews.
Ellen, let me interrupt you just for half a second, because you struck a nerve, and you looked at me and smiled because you knew you were striking a nerve. Not intentionally. Let me ask it in a question. When you try to find a supplier for the products that you're supplying throughout the communities, what is your procurement procedures? How do you determine where it's best to purchase something?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the question. You know, RealCap is a large organization with about a $40 million a year budget. We have very strict procurement policies that follow all the regulations. We do bid for all the supplies that we purchase. We look for to make sure that we're getting the most cost-effective supplies. So we do look at price. We look at if the products are available to be delivered and if the supplier can work with us on shipping. And for this program, I guess, honestly, we are micromanagers. We stretch every dime. We get bids for every single item that we buy and make sure that we get the lowest cost item, because $300 isn't, we need to make that go as far as possible. So we have, and I love working with numbers and budgets and the crew that we've worked with to do the purchasing here. We spend significant amount of time making sure that every item is the lowest cost that we can get.
How do you advertise your bids?
Well, we have it's the federal policy that if it's over $100,000 that's being of supplies being purchased from a single vendor, it is a closed bidding process. That we have a purchasing procurement department that does the regulated bid process, where it is advertised and vendors can put in for supplies.
Does everything come to Anchorage and then is shipped from Anchorage out to the bush? Or what I'm driving at is there economies of scales that you can reach so that not everything is purchased in Anchorage, but that you're also supporting elsewhere throughout the state?
Mm-hmm.
So Fairbanks or Nome or wherever it might be, that you can get the best deal for the community that you are going to be putting the supplies in, so that you don't have to have double or triple, you know, transportation costs. The back end costs that are hidden sometimes. It isn't mm-hmm. always the upfront cost that is the true cost, as you know. Do you get anything from Fairbanks? I'm just going to say it outright because I represent Fairbanks area, and we have a lot of folks who supply energy type of equipment.
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chair. I really understand what you're asking. This is one of the areas that I'm very proud of with RealCap, is how effective we are in making sure we're stretching the dollars and doing consolidated shipping. If we have a weatherization program going on and another solid waste project, we make sure we use that barge space and we honestly put connexes of our weatherization supplies or other supplies all together. We're very good at this piece. For our particular EnergyWise program in the past 2 years, we've been focused on, we've been working with the Nano region, and I do not believe we've been purchasing supplies from Fairbanks for that. But if we were working for communities near Fairbanks, and we could buy things through Fairbanks, we really do look at what's the most effective way to ship and know that we don't have to have everything come through Anchorage. In fact, we'd rather not have that. We have a very small warehouse that we fill to the brim when things do get shipped into Anchorage. We'd rather have them drop ship directly out. So we have looked at that. We've looked at, when we've been working in Kotzebue, what we've been able to buy locally from Kotzebue has an excellent service there. And then even in the communities where we're in, if we're in a community and we need some supplies right then, we'll go to we have an account we'll set up with the community store so that we're using the local vendors too. So we really are aware that it's not just supporting the Anchorage economy, but it's looking at how we can do that in all the communities we work in.
And I appreciate that, and especially since we have, you know, different mail routes, and so different cities serve as hubs, and perhaps they get special deals, but they need to know that they're eligible to be put into the bid,
yes.
And sometimes they don't see necessarily where the registry is, so I would just encourage, you know, examining that, because it's something I asked in State Affairs with the insurance providers to the Department of Administration. How do we develop regional economies and build up our regional hubs so that you know, people can afford to be living throughout Alaska and not just accumulate wealth to our largest population. So if you know, just keep that in mind.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think we're in total agreement on that. We're looking, I think that's one of the advantages of working at RailCAP, is we are a statewide organization and we're looking to do development statewide that supports economies in all the different communities.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay, so we received written surveys from 700 of the homes we were in the first year, and we do see some solid percentages. We had, again, about 90-95% participation rates. 86% of the people are still practicing energy efficiency and conservation measures 3 to 6 months or longer afterwards, which is really, I mean, I'd love to see that say 100%, but really 86-82% saying their home heating costs have gone down. Those are good numbers. That's, I think, about my New Year's resolutions and where I am 3 to 6 months later. 82, that's great that we're having 80% of the people stick with it. And that's with the crews going back into the home, so that's both hearing from the crews and from the residents about the impact. My understanding is from everybody I've talked to at the university at ICER about what is the gold standard for looking at does this work, it is looking at before and after electric bills. We were able to do that. We partner with Alaska Village Electrical Cooperative. They've been wonderful to work with in sharing electric bills with us. Residents agree to letting us look at their 12-month before and after electric bills. So for one of our 2010 communities, we had a large enough sample size that we were able to look at before and after electric bills. We had a graduate master's degree student who did this as an independent project, which I think helps it be removed from me looking to make sure it's working, to hearing from an independent party saying that, yes, you're seeing savings of about $20 per month in electricity from the average resident. And then for those communities in that year, that was equivalent of about $39 a month in what the state was subsidizing with PCE, with the PCE subsidy. So good sustained 12-month post EnergyWise reduction in kilowatt use. And again, just watching that bar go down. It is very interesting to look at electric bills. Honestly, I do like looking at electric bills. There were, I would say there are two main groups that we're seeing. We're seeing people who are already doing a lot of conservation and doing what they can to keep their bills low. I am always surprised when I hear some of the numbers that nationally our average monthly electric bill in the U.S. is about 750 kilowatt hours. In Anchorage, it's about 725. In rural Alaska, it's about 350 to 450 kilowatt hours. They're already doing what they can to reduce their energy consumption.
So you do have a large number of people who are already using, already doing some conservation, and they will do what they can to reduce that even further or even reallocate it if they realize they're having an old refrigerator or freezer that's sucking up a lot of energy, but they've been reducing the number of lights they keep on. They may, you know, shut down that refrigerator and increase. So there's a little bit of a bounce back where people then can reallocate the funds to have a better quality of life. But one of the things we're really seeing, there are some people who always exceed the 500 kilowatt maximum on PCE subsidy or just have huge bills. And those are really the people that benefit from this. And we'll hear people say, I saved $700, you know, on my electric bills this past year. So we do see some big savings from those who just had no access, no idea on how to save electricity to begin with. So we do see kind of some people saving a little bit and then large groups saving just a huge amount on their large bills. So if we use the Kosiglik example to see what we're saving between PCE and monthly electric bills, this project has about a three-year return on investment in electrical savings. So if you invest $2,000, we're seeing a savings of about $700 a year. It takes about 3 years to pay that back. After doing this pilot year, we started hearing from Nano Regional Corporation, and we developed this corporate nonprofit partnership, which I think is exactly the direction we want to go with this. If we can get some private funds to help fund some of these improvements, that is just a wonderful, it's been a wonderful partnership for us. So they were hearing a lot from their constituents, like a lot of rural Alaska, but especially in the Northwest with the extreme cold. 1 in 4 household dollars are going to energy costs. They were seeing a 20% poverty rate, 20% unemployment rate, and people spending $788 a month on home heating and electric. That's a huge amount. And they were hearing from their constituents, what can we do about this? So we met with NANA over the course of several months and put together this partnership. And NANA Regional Corporation then decided to contract with RuralCap to provide EnergyWise to every household in the region to help, you know, alleviate some of these costs. So with that partnership, we've been working with NANA Regional Corporation for the past 2 years, the Alaska Energy Authority, the local communities, and then some other bonus partners. Northwest Arctic Borough has been putting in, they're called the Energy Detective Meters, TED meters. And what it is instead of having your electric meter behind your house where you maybe never really look at it, it's on the top of the TV. It's this little white box that shows you what your current kilowatt consumption is, so it's cranking along. And that's a really helpful visual way for people to see what's going on in your home. So if you're all in the living room watching TV and yet this thing is just spinning along, yeah, you know there's something wrong. Let's go look around the house. So they've been, the Northwest Arctic Borough has been putting these in homes, but it's a great partnership for EnergyWise to collaborate on this and say, don't just put it in the homes, let's do this together. So while they're installing the meters, our crews are working with them and the residents to go around the home so you can watch the meter drop. So it's been just a lot of that partnership going on, and we'd love to see more of that. So well, in the past two
I think we all need one of those. In fact, we could use them in every room in this building, but yeah. Representative Nugget.
I would recommend that you approach people in the North Slope to also with this, because I think this is a terrific idea. And if you could expand that, I mean, you know, I'm sure you'll get reception, positive reception from the North Slope, because I think, you know, they're trying to do the same thing. But if you create a partnership up there, then and I think it'll spread a whole lot more, and it'll be better for everybody. I mean, I recommend, please do that.
Thank you, Representative Nagyat, through the chair. You know, I just, honestly, I'm a bit of an energy geek. I love talking about this. We've been around the state talking about it at various events. And we've heard from almost every region of the state saying, how can we get this in our region? What can we do? Mm-hmm. And we're continuing to have a lot of those conversations. How can we partner up? Let's not reinvent the wheel. How can we, you know, how can we work together on this? And that's been very effective the past couple of years just in the NANA region. We've been able to leverage some other funds to come in. We've been in, at this point, all 11 communities. We still have more homes to do in this coming winister, 2013-2014, in Kotzebue. We've done about 180 of the homes so far. We've been able to get certification for about 60 of our crew members in those professional certifications. We've had a lot of employment. We've had over 1,000 homes visited, 95% participation rate, and to me that really shows this is something people want, they're engaged in. We're not begging people to participate. We're getting, you know, when are you coming to my home? So that's just really, really beneficial. We're hearing a lot of great reports about energy bill savings. Of course, we're just now, right now, hitting the 12-month before and after phase for last winter's work. So we're just now looking at before and after electrical savings data. But of course, Nana said, well, come on, tell us what's happened with the funding we've put in, because they've put in significant funding. The first year is about $860,000 from Nana Corporation, second year about $900,000. So we did a follow-up survey with homes that had just received EnergyWise for at least a couple of months, and this was last December, January, and February, so December 2011, January, and February 2012. And if you all remember, that's when there were record cold temperatures in the Niana region. So we went in the warmer month of December, and we were talking to people in January and February where they had that awesome cold snap. So before EnergyWise, the average electric bill was about $312. They saw about a 10% drop in their electric bills the month after EnergyWise, which is significant. We don't always equate electricity with cold weather, but a lot of people are using space heaters and whatever they can to heat their homes. So to see that go down despite the cold snap is significant. And then we had about 82% saying their homes felt warmer even during the cold snap because of the minor repairs we're making around doors, windows, and just installing those, even those little heating pads that go around an outlet. A lot of outlets aren't insulated, so you're just, the cold air is just blowing in and you get, you know, ice cubes forming on your outlets, which is a safety hazard as well as many other things. So here's where we come down to our CAPSIS request. We have put in a CAPSIS request for $1.6 million to support the EnergyWise programs. And this would support EnergyWise being in 12 communities this coming winter of 2013-2014. Like, this is a, you know, it's, I feel so confident coming in and saying, we know this works because we've done it for a few years. We know we can roll things out in 12 months. Our first year of EnergyWise, we had our grant agreement come through at the end of July. We were on the ground training people in September and October, got our supplies delivered. We finished 1,000 homes in 12 months. We know we can do this. We have the administrative support to do it well.
Representative Higgins.
Thank you. Since I didn't know much about you guys, obviously, we go to the net, we look you up, and we find your fact sheet, you know, that you guys have done. So, you know, obviously, you've done some pretty good accomplishments, no doubt about it. You know, agency-wide, you guys, at least this, your site says, you had 977 employed in 83 communities with a payroll of over $14 million.
That's
$36 million budget. You also do child development division. You also have a community development division. You also have a planning and construction division, and you also have a supportive and housing division, which all works together. So it's not just energy that Rural Cap does.
Yep.
Okay. Now, the thing that kind of caught my eye, though, was under your planning and construction division, one of your highlights was you grew the weatherization program from $1.7 million 4 years ago to $15 million this year with the addition of the Anchorage program.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and it's always my concern is that, and I appreciate the fact that Anchorage, you're helping them, but they have one of the lowest energy costs in the state. The rural areas like Benny and us in the interior, and I've seen that with agencies where they concentrate in the Anchorage area and they put a lot of money in that area, which I'm not saying they don't need it, but if we're going to do this, I think 90% of our funds need to be where the highest energy costs are so that we can help those people. And so, you know, when I read that, I thought, you know, am I reading that right? I mean, how much money did we put in there instead of out in the rural areas? I mean, we should be concentrating in the rural areas more than in the rail belt. And I know the people in the rail belt and Anchorage are going to go, oh, geez, Representative Higgins doesn't care about us. I do care about them, but I also care about the people that are paying the real energy costs. Right now, people in that area, you know, and they don't like their bills, but it's way cheaper than mine. There's no doubt about that. So I guess what's the answer to that? And I may be way off base here, too, because I don't know the numbers.
Thank you for your question, Representative Higgins. Through the chair, great way of pointing out something we need to improve on our website, because I don't think that's an accurate representation of where the funding is going. It's true that we did grow our weatherization program from the smaller amount to about $15 million over that four-year time frame, but that growth isn't all going back into Anchorage. So what happened about 2 years ago is the municipality of Anchorage said, you know, we want out of the weatherization business, and Rural Cap said, we'll take it. We know what we're doing. We can do it efficiently. So we've expanded our service area, which is that map I showed you earlier, Northwest Alaska and Juneau, to also include Anchorage. So we have been serving homes in Anchorage. Again, not the majority of the funding, but we do have a large number of homes we do in Anchorage. About 500 for the current year is our plan. And actually, AHFC funding allowed for homes changes if it's urban like Anchorage. It's a smaller amount than what we're allowed to spend in rural Alaska. And I think I'd speak for Rural Cap and say we're with you that the funding needs to go to the highest cost. That's certainly the design of EnergyWise. And mostly it was we took on the service contract to provide services for municipality of Anchorage homes.
Okay, good. Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Kazaria, I apologize if I missed this. The 12 communities that are coming up that you want to serve, how do you, if, and again, I apologize if you said this, how are you selecting them and who are they, if you know?
Thank you. Great question, Representative Josephson. Through the chair. I think actually my next slide has a bit about that. So, again, you guys are so great with your segues as we're moving ahead. Let me just skip ahead one slide, and I'll go back. So we know from past experience that to get to about 1,000 homes, it's 12 communities because of the varying sizes. We have already, go back one, we've been working with the Denali Commission and the Department of Energy on a project they call Project START, and that's been focused on Venati, Arctic Village, and three other communities in the state, again, trying to do concentrated services, and Rural Cap's been brought in because we can get the community engaged. So Denali Commission has already committed $100,000 if we can include Venati and Arctic Village in the EnergyWise program. So those would be two communities. But what we would like to do and what we've done in the past that's been very successful is look at communities with the highest energy costs, talk to all the weatherization service providers and see who is where for the coming year. Just to confirm, we have a basic outline, but it does change up to the last minute because we want to get to communities that aren't receiving a lot of other services. We'd love to get to communities that aren't receiving major weatherization improvements so we can focus on spreading the wealth. So we'd look at that. What we've done in the past that's been successful is we then invite those communities to apply. We let them know what's involved with participating because the community, while they may not have financial resources, they do have buy into this program. So they commit to sharing with us free storage space, assisting us with hiring and training space because we don't want these little costs to add up and take away from what we can bring into the home. So the community really makes a commitment. So we do have an application process where we work with it, communities with high energy costs to make sure they're willing to participate at this level, contribute these in-kind resources, and that's how the selection has occurred. What we'd also like to see is that we can spread this around the state a bit and look at several different regions, maybe just for economy of scale. It makes the most sense to do two or three communities that are kind of near each other. So we would like to do that in several of these regions that haven't received the program at this point.
Follow up? So on that then, how do you work with the other agencies that are in these regions like cold weather, cold climate housing or interior weatherization or whomever, to some of the names I'm familiar with?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We do work closely with all these partners. I think that's one of the things I've appreciated about working at Rural Cap is that we're really open to this. So we're at the point where we're well known for doing this program of being kind of the education people, the energy education people. So we do work with the local housing authority, the tribal and city council, whoever the weatherization service provider is, to make sure that we're coordinating services and not duplicating efforts. Our own weatherization department, it's just we have to coordinate internally to make sure we know which homes we're going to be in and that we're sharing information. Our energy fairs are an opportunity to do this. If there are multiple energy projects going on, the EA is working on a renewable energy project they're funding. We want to know so that we can have a broad energy fair that launches energy-wise but also talks about the other projects going on.
And how are you being received by the utilities? Some of the utilities have these type of programs, but some of them reluctantly are participating, perhaps, because it also hurts their ability to meet costs.
Good question, Mr. Chair. We've actually had a great relationship with the utilities. Most of the communities we're in, more than half have been AVEC communities, and you can see in the packet of information that Mira Kohler has been a friend of ours helping us run this project and giving us feedback along the way and even sharing their staff time to help us sort electric bills. So that's the sort of reception we've had, even with the smaller local utilities. They're connected enough to their residents that they know people are having trouble paying their bills and makes it easier if they can be the good guy and be supportive of us. So we haven't really had any negative feedback. We've actually had New Vista, that's the other support letter you see. They work in the Chulista area with their communities, and they've approached us. We've actually submitted grants together to see if we can fund the program. So that's the sort of relationship we've been able to have.
Excellent. Mr. Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If individual legislators want to support the program and you've got a CAPSIS request of $1.6 million, whose office was that submitted through so that folks can talk to that legislator?
Thank you, Representative Foster. Through the chair, we have four different CAPSIS requests in the system for various rural CAP programs. This is the energy-related one, and we did work with Senator Ellis's office to have the password logon information there. So that's how those are. That's where those originated.
Statewide request.
For the statewide request, right?
Okay. Thank you.
So just to give you a little bit more information about our operational plan, and we'll wrap this up, we would expect that if we did get this funding, we could be in 12 communities, 1,000 households, and we would employ about 70 rural Alaskans. And I just think I covered part of the evaluation process that has been very, very helpful in the past. We found that the communities that apply are really committed to this. And then just a little more information, the total project cost would be $2 million to be in 1,000 homes. We understand that funding is really tight this year. We know bringing, hey, here's a new thing to the table is going to be hard to get funded. So we've been trying to find other sources of funds to go along with this. We have had good conversations already with the Rasmussen Foundation, who's an ongoing partner of ours, and we've worked with them on a lot of big projects. So we've had an initial conversation with them, and they're interested in funding about $300,000 of this total project if we did leverage some state funding, and even doing that for 2 years in a row if they would be interested in that. So, and we're still working with regional corporations and others to see if there's any possibility of getting some other funding that would, again, reduce this than funding needed from the state. And I think that's the total.
And online, we also have a couple callers, but first I see Mr. Justin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have to excuse myself, but I wanted to, this was very beneficial, and I wanted to tell Ms. Kazari and Ms. Scanlon that the most impressive slide, I think, is the Kasikluk study, where in 3 years it pays for itself. I just really applaud the work you're doing. And thank you for doing this.
Excellent. So if you'd like to have Tommy Ballard or Kirk Oviak, are they with you, or should I just call them?
Yes, Mr. Cherry. Tommy Ballard is a resident who received the services in Selawik, and Kirk Oviak has been one of our crew leaders members, and they really love this program, and they wanted to participate. So if you would go ahead and invite them, that would be great.
So I'll open it up to public comment at this time. Tommy Ballard from Selawik, are you online?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning. If you would put yourself on the record and your affiliation, and I give you the mic. Mr. Ballard, go
I'm
ahead.
Sorry, you've talked about public.
Hello? Sounds like we're having telephone problems. Yep, I can hear you now.
Okay, would you like me to testify now?
Yes, if you would, sir. Go ahead and state your name and your affiliation.
All right, I hope our reception is good. Anyway, morning to everyone. My name is Tom Dallas, Sr. of Salt Lake. My age, I am 56. Formerly mayor of the city of Salt Lake. I used to also be the tribal administrator for the native village of Salt Lake and the housing director for the native village of Salt Lake for 24 years. Currently, I am unemployed. For your information, Salt Lake is 30 miles above the Arctic Circle, and right now the temperature outside is 25 below. I want to mention that for my home specifically, my wife and I, we spend almost $1,200 a month for our electrical and heating. And to get material to try to fix our home, I just want to give one example. For one 2x4 that costs $2.40 from Seattle, to get it here to Salt Lake, landed cost, if we were to purchase here and locally in our store, is $18. And I just want to mention that. I am very thankful that we have this program here in our village to try to help us out. Unfortunately, these guys worked during the full winter months and weren't able to go outside and put caulking and stuff in our windows and do some outside work. I'm hoping that, if they were to get further funding, that they can come back when our weather warms up. I want to mention that it has helped our community a whole lot. It created temporary jobs, giving our young people a lot of hope in life. It's very hard to get work here in Salt Lake. Most of the time we just wait around for somebody to get fired and like 70 to 80 of us will apply for that job. But the great benefit I saw in our community with this program was sobriety. It helped our young people to say, hey, I got a job now. I'm not going to be drinking or do drugs and stuff like that, and try to support my family. I don't know what else to add, but I want to thank you all for being here and coming to Charlotte and doing this. I am open for questions if there are any.
Thank you, Mr. Ballard. Appreciate your testimony. Any questions from the committee? We don't see any. We do appreciate your expenses and definitely understand those utility costs being from North Pole. I think it's a little warmer there today than it is in Selawik, but you might be able to get landed costs for your lumber cheaper from Fairbanks in Seattle, just saying. But thank you for your comments, and as a former mayor, I definitely appreciate your perspective. We do have Representative Agiak, also a former mayor, from Barrow, with a question.
No, I don't have a question. I just have I saw the this firsthand when I was in Selawik during my campaign last year, and there were full bore on their rural cap weatherization program, and there were quite a few people working there this past summer, and I was proud of ROCAP for doing that work. And they, I talked to a few of them, and they said they it provided them an opportunity to make money before the winter, and so I really applaud ROCAP and also the people in Selawik who helped fix some of those houses for to make sure that they can save money. Thank you very much.
Great comment. The need for jobs to provide hope and allow for teen sobriety or any adult sobriety, that's a very big part, and energy certainly plays a part in that. And hopefully we can get lower cost energy just so that you can attract some investment in there and more jobs, period. But thank you for the work that you're doing, ROCAP. And thank you again, Mr. Ballett. Is Kirk Oviak online?
Okay, yeah, this is Kirk. We have a lot of background static or something going on, but was working real good, but can you hear me now?
We can hear you now. Thank you. Go ahead and identify yourself and your affiliation for the record.
Okay, I'm Kirk Oviak, Jr. I'm 52, and I worked for the Boys and Girls Club for 8 years, still president, and I'm also in the IRA council seat, still president, and also with the school. I'm still president as an advisory board. And with the Boys and Girls Club, I can see that we had a lot of cutbacks, and I was able to fill in for a few months as a two leader for Village Rights Program here in our village, and going through training with that program and be able to deal with our people that need work in their homes inside. And the last home we did was a big dome. It was a dome. And here in our village, we live in a center where our home shifts all the time, and we have a lot of cracks. And like Tommy mentioned, the outside, we have a lot of open places where we weren't able to go work on because it got cold. But the last home we did was a big, huge home, a lot of big cracks, a lot of draft, and we did what we could. The family was really happy, and our people we work with they asked when we're going to start again, and this program helped our young people, even they were surprised to say that they passed their drug test and their alcohol, and that gave them hope that they can have jobs in the future by being drug free. So all the supplies that they provided for real people that each home. And I just wanted to mention on the weatherization that people that qualified, they did a good job, and some of us that didn't qualify because we're under the NIHA program. But with the EnergyWise program, we're really happy that they helped the homes here in Selawik, because we're the next biggest community besides Kotzebue in our 11 villages here in the region. We're growing, and there are some homes that most homes we completed, but there was like a few that we didn't get to. But later on, found out about this program. So thank you very much. If you have any questions, I'll have the answer to.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? We appreciate what you're doing, Mr. Oviak, on behalf of the youth in your community, and thank you for this good report. At this time, is there any other questions for Ellen or Sarah. Sarah, go ahead and wrap up if you like.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The two gentlemen who just testified reminded me of one other important point about this program. We have had kids, as you know, in the community fair. Everybody shows up to understand what's this about, what do we have to do. So the kids come, and you know, kids pick up technology stuff really quickly. So when the meters and other things were brought in and the little calculators about trying to figure out how much each of the appliances and other items in the house used, the kids picked up on that. And so what a valuable lesson that we learned from this was that those kids are going to carry that knowledge and experience with trying to figure out what is used in the home going forward and help their parents in the homes understand what that all means and how those kilowatt hours burn and what they translate into cash. So we found that to be a valuable experience, and of course now we make sure that those kids are involved, the youth are involved, so that they can, going forward, they will carry this with them and use that experience and knowledge to conserve energy and reduce that burden in the home. So that was good for us to see that happening, and I forgot to mention that.
Go ahead.
Just one more comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the other thing that Kirk brought up that I think I failed to mention was that we did not have an eligibility requirement for this program, so we did it community-wide, which meant that it brought relief to those who didn't, like Kirk was saying, who weren't eligible for weatherization, that we brought this community-wide, and I think that really is one of the reasons why it was so broadly embraced, is that everybody received the service. And just as a note, we are hosting a lunch today at Edgman's office just to talk about energy topics with staffers or whoever is interested. So we know this is an ongoing conversation of how do we combine our resources to be as effective as possible. And we're just really interested in hearing from everybody and brainstorming about how to do that. So thank you.
Excellent. That's a lunch and learn, you say, in Edmund's office?
Mr. Chair, no, I don't think it's officially a lunch and learn. It's more like a staffer lunch. So there'll be lunch and energy conversation going on. So that's today at noon.
At noon. Okay. I appreciate that. And if there's no other questions and no other wrap-up, just getting our notes for next week. We're planning to have a meeting on March 27th. Nothing is exactly set up. So we will be posting that and getting that out to everybody. With nothing further,
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Can I just do one final thank you so much to every one of you for your time in the last month when we've come to meet you and talk to you about this, and particularly to today for inviting us to present. We really appreciate it, and really appreciate the hard work that you've got ahead of you. And if there's anything we can do to help, please let us know. Any questions?
Well, this has been a very informative meeting, very helpful. I think all of us agree on that, and thank you very much for what you do on behalf of Alaskans as well. So wish we could do more, but again, putting it into perspective, a comprehensive look. We need to wrap resources, economic development, energy, transportation, everything to connect Alaskans with each other and with opportunity, with jobs, with resources, energy, the whole skabang. So in the meantime, it's a great work. So thank you. All right, we will adjourn now at 9:28.